Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Cindy Wolf.
And I'm Tony Foreman.
And we're talking about inexpensive way to eat, basically. You know, cost-effective food, things that are readily available.
And relatively healthy.
Easy to find and healthy. Yeah, and healthy. I mean, we have talked a little bit about butter, but I mean, my goodness, we're not going to eradicate butter from our diet.
The sun is coming up, Cindy, you're talking about butter, okay? I violated a little bit because I mentioned that Benedict dish. Mm-hmm. With a pork confit as being cost effective, which it is. I don't know that it's exactly calorically conscientious.
We're putting hollandaise on there if it's Benedict.
No, exactly.
Right.
So you need a glass of wine to wash it down to, to try to.
So what's the wine that you would serve with that dish with the pulled pork?
Probably the best region in the world for wine that is cost effective and food flexible is Alsace, in the northeast of France. Right on the German border, the Rhine River runs right through it, and the most noble grape, the most famous one for aging over time, is Riesling. But there are excellent Pinot Blanc, literally white Pinot. There are 48 varieties of Pinot grapes grown, they're all grown in Alsace. In fact, I know one fellow has all 48 varieties in one field.
Oh my gosh!
Because he's kind of a wizard.
That's cool.
That's for another program. Mm-hmm. But a glass of a good Pinot Blanc, and you're in good vintages, 12 and 13. 13 is pretty bad in a lot of France, but in Alsace is strong, and you're going to have like fresh, young, very clean Pinot Blanc to drink. That, you know, very like appley, not the smoky of Pinot Gris. Appley clean with a Benedict dish, and that'll make all those calories wash away.
Okay, Pinot Blanc.
That's a big lie. But it'll make you much happier.
You have carrots on your list, and I have onion, celery, and carrots, so why don't you start?
I think carrots, when they're really good, are a great thing to make a dish with. I mean, the thing is to get good carrots. You're not talking about, it's funny, people will say horse carrots, you know, the sort of giant, like, carrots grown on some crazy factory farm, but carrots that are nice with tops, and we're in a state that a lot of the year, people will grow local carrots that have pretty good flavor. You don't want them too tiny. You can't do much with them. And you don't want them the giant, quote-unquote, horse carrots. You want something that's, you know, what, 4, 5, 6 inches.
Right. And you do want them with the tops still on.
In length. You want them with the tops because that'll give you an idea of how fresh they are. Mm-hmm. If they've been shipped across the country, they certainly don't have their tops. And if the tops don't smell, like carrots, don't buy the carrots. Mm-hmm. And like, no joke, because they carry all the scent.
I love carrots. That's my favorite snack. Just eat some raw carrots. I eat them all the time. So good. When they're sweet, they're amazing.
I love raw carrots. I love cooked carrots much more. Mm-hmm. And carrots, if you slice them very thin, you can make an excellent, very simple gratin in a gratin dish. Slice very thin, layered, a couple of layers high. You could use butter, which would make Cindy smile. You could use a little bit of relatively neutral oil. The biggest thing is a little bit of breadcrumb and some kind of a hard cheese. It could be Parmigiano Reggiano. It could be something else that's more cost-effective. Watch the things that are more cost-effective. Sometimes watch the salt level. Sometimes buying a nice piece of Parmigiano, it goes a very long way if you use a microplane.
It's true.
If you poach those carrots first in very salted water, bring them down to room temperature, slice them very thin, lay them on the gratin dish. A little toasted breadcrumb, very fine. Cover the entire thing with that. Put it in the oven. When it's ready to come out of the oven and the breadcrumbs are just beginning to brown, just do a very fine dusting in the Parmigiano Reggiano. And that, you'd be surprised how remarkable the flavor is. You can go, if it's thin layers of carrots, thin meaning the size of a penny and not something thicker than that, which requires a little bit of knife skill, they kind of melt together in a very nice way. That and a little drizzle of agave or a little tiny drizzle of very good honey is great. If you want, you can toss those carrots in advance with that, or you can do it as an addition at the very end. Actually, I end up liking it better, and I use less when it's a little bit at the very end.
Okay. Sounds good.
That's nice as a side dish for something else. But
I like carrots with tomato and curry. So much. Those are some of my favorites. So I make a soup that way. And I just saute the onions and butter.
I love that soup.
Oh, gosh. And you don't, you know, so saute the onions and butter, corn oil. Add your carrots. Add pureed tomato, or you can use fresh tomato. Some is, you know, maybe use tomatoes that are soft from a salad. And add them to the pot with a large amount of carrots, a little bit of onion, and I just sort of add the mild curry to the pot as the onions and the carrots are sauteing, and then I add the tomato product. I add a little bit of chicken stock and cream if you want, and you could forget both of those things if you don't want either one of those in, but I like them both in, and salt and pepper, and just let everything simmer gently for about 15, 20 minutes, and then puree it and strain it. And that is something, I mean, if you like the soup enough, soup is always better the next day. You could certainly eat it more than one day if you don't mind, you know, having leftovers. Or you could eat it cold. So you could maybe eat it hot the first day for dinner when you've made it. And then, you know, 2 days later, have a little chilled carrot soup for salad for lunch.
Not surprisingly, wine from Alsace is probably a pretty good match for that.
Okay,
that
good.
Little soup as well. When you're dealing with ingredients and from Indian cooking, Thai cooking, a lot of Asian cooking, it does well.
I think also with carrots, I mean, when you were talking about, you have carrots written down and I have mirepoix, which is carrot, celery, and onion. And I think I can't imagine not just having all three of those things in my refrigerator pretty much all the time, because I can kind of, you know, there are times when I come home and I don't have anything in my refrigerator, but if I have some basic things in there and I have some basic things in my pantry, I can make a meal.
It is remarkable if you can cook when you just find things. We joked about quinoa at the beginning of this segment, and I realized it was last week I had to make a meal, and I was like, well, what have I got?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a box of quinoa. Quinoa is one of those things that you can spend three times as much for it in a very fancy store, or you can buy it at like a Middle Eastern grocery or something.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. and spend very little for it. It's one of these ancient grains that beware what happens pricing-wise with that. It's a little bit easier than rice in some ways to cook. Your method's very, very quick and easy, and you have a great touch with it, but it's the same kind of thing where you're going to sweat shallot or onion in a pan, and I wouldn't use butter for this. It's just a neutral oil, grapeseed oil or something, whatever's most cost-effective, canola oil or something. Sweat that, and then bring the heat up a little bit and toast your quinoa with that. And that quantity-wise, if you have the standard sort of box that you see in stores, you're looking at maybe two shallots worth of toasting that. And what I had left were a few fava beans, and I had a little bit of duck bacon, but you could certainly use pork bacon or the pork confit we talked about having in your fridge or something like that. Or if you wanted to make it vegetarian, favas and carrots would be terrific as well. And the quinoa will take about 15, 20 minutes and not that much stirring. It's just a wooden spoon and some stirring, and it's somewhere between like wild rice and lentils or something to cook. And then when you get just about to the end there, the favas I had peeled and just laid the favas on top of, just literally covered the top of the quinoa that was almost done with the favas, and laid salt on those favas. And these are raw. These are not blanched.
But they're peeled.
Put the top on there and let it sit for 5 or 6 minutes, and then put the heat back on and added that little bit of bacon in and stirred those favas in. And the favas literally steamed from the little bit of cooling from the quinoa, and they absorbed that salt nicely. And, you know, that and just a bunch of chopped parsley and a poached egg on top of it was a pretty darn nice brunch dish. And that runny yolk is fantastic with the quinoa. That's some of the thing about a grain like that, because it's a grain with real texture. You need something as a foil for it. You need something that is like that egg yolk, that's a little bit luxurious.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing. We're talking about an exotic sort of grain, I guess, or one that's new to a lot of people in quinoa. But how about something that's ubiquitous with potatoes? We see them everywhere. They're frying potatoes. They're baking potatoes. They're potatoes that you like better for purees. You know, what do you use for what application? And honestly, how about, what do you do with a baked potato? Or what do you do with potato puree that's not going to cost you a fortune?
That's a great thing about, you know,
and be healthful.
Yeah, there's so many things you can do with, baked potato, you know, leftover. I actually made myself one the other day because, again, it is a great meal for one person. And if you buy a large baking potato, while it takes, you know, almost an hour for it to roast in the oven, you can eat half of it one way and the other half another way.
You can usually drink two glasses of wine in the meantime.
Oh, my goodness. So I just had it very simply with, okay, no, I don't eat in a healthy way. I had it with creme fraiche and butter and salt and pepper and cheddar cheese, actually. Oh, boy. So a healthy way to eat a baked potato, I don't know. Put some broccoli on there, which we'll have locally. We already have it locally now. So you could put broccoli or spinach on there or all kinds of things that are vegetables that you like. And that's it. But the leftovers, I actually chopped up the skin with the little bit of potato left.
The change in the look on your face when you go from the three dairy products that you like to the throw some vegetables on there is amazing. Vegetables, maybe. You talk about having mirepoix in the
I'm not putting mirepoix on my baked potato.
Yeah, but just a mirepoix that you caramelized a little bit.
You could put small dice of carrot, celery, and onion sauteed in oil with salt and pepper on your potato. And
you
could add some bacon to that. You could add some of that pork confit to that. I know, I'm not taking this seriously, but
the spinach and restuffing it sort of thing, I think, might be
spinach would be good.
That might be very interesting.
You could put a little ricotta cheese in. You could buy a low-fat ricotta.
Now you're speaking my language.
Yeah, I love ricotta cheese. And, spinach ricotta.
Pine nuts might be.
And the leftover of the baked potato would be fine. I just kind of chopped mine up. And then I take the other half of the potato and just sort of break up the skin, and I sauteed it in a little bit of corn oil and added, that's when I actually did add vegetables to it. So that was really kind of fun because I added, I had actually green beans in my refrigerator that I had culled from a salad, and I just cut those into little pieces. And I had some chickpeas, which I know that's on your list too. And I actually crushed those and added that to the pan, and I did add bacon. So we could skip the bacon part. But I would definitely suggest adding, we're trying to be healthy, but that's just another fun way to kind of deal with it, the other half of the potato. But
so it's kind of like a hash with the potato skin.
Exactly. You could add onions to it. But the other thing, you know, you talk about what do you do with what potato. Fingerling potatoes make the best potato puree. And I do peel them. But first
They're little and expensive and a pain in the backside.
They are.
But so, gosh, they're nice.
They are. They're delicious. And if you were to make potato puree from fingerling potatoes, you would cook them in their skins in heavily salted water. And then you would pull the skin off, and then you would rice them and make your potato puree. With Yukon Gold potatoes, which are so very versatile, there are about a million things, again, you can do with. This is a great thing about food. There's so many different things you can do with food. You know, I'll peel my Yukon Gold, thinly slice it, and make cakes, what I call a cake, which is just thinly sliced potato laid out like a flour in a hot pan. You can use corn oil. You can use bacon fat. You can use duck fat. You can use butter. You can use whatever you want that's on, you know, in your health scale to use. And just thinly sliced, cook it on both sides. You have to flip it, and you can either learn how to flip it, or you can use a fish spatula is good for that, or any kind of metal spatula is good to flip the potato. And that's a really fun way to make a potato cake. And you could add chives to that. You could put creme fraiche on that. You could put goat cheese on that. You could put Reggiano cheese on that. You could put other fresh herbs than the chives. You could use a little bit of tiny, really finely chopped rosemary and serve that with a piece of salmon. Or another fish. It's really great with fish. I love it with beef, but I actually make that potato cake for my eggs in the morning sometimes too. But it's really good with a piece of fish.
I think with Yukons, I almost always want to do like an olive oil crushed potato. So it's pretty naturally healthful kind of a thing. And I was thinking about a person cooking for themselves. You literally boil one or two potatoes in heavily salted water. And once they cool down enough that you can handle them, but they're still warm, you crush them in a bowl with a little bit of very good olive oil, and you check the salt level and add the salt that you need or you don't need. You lay that out on the plate. You have a tiny bit of a fresh herb, just a little bit of chive, could be a little bit of parsley, a little bit of basil. It's almost explosive, the flavor that you get. That is a very easy, very quick way to do something nicely.
Mm-hmm.
So please let me talk about things that I love.
Okay, what is that?
Beans.
Oh, yes.
Beans and peas, you know this.
Beans are great.
I recently read a story, I forget the news source, where they talked about all of the people who are the longest living people around the world in different parts of the world. And a lot of them had carbohydrate-based diets, and a lot of their carbohydrate-driven diets were based on beans. No joke. One of those groups of people are in Sardinia, in the center of the country, and there's a bunch of villages, and it's chickpeas like crazy. And chickpeas I love.
Me too.
And chickpeas are not a big piece of money.
They take a long time to cook.
They take patience. And it's the kind of thing that you wake up and you deal with it in the morning, and then you can make decisions about what you want to do with it for dinner or for the next day.
They are very inexpensive.
But they're not a big piece of money. And you can get good flavor from them with just dried herbs. If it's just onion that you have and dried herbs and water.
Right.
If you cook them correctly, meaning the skins are not falling off of them, you can get a nice product. And then they can be mashed into a cake. And then they can be given breadcrumb and fried in the pan and served with a piece of the pulled pork that you made, or with the chicken thigh that you made. There's so many different things that you can do.
And when you say cooked correctly.
Cooked correctly means to where it's al dente but not raw. I mean, that's where there's still texture to it, but it's neither mushy. The main thing is that skin is not coming off yet. That's when it becomes mushy. If the skin is still intact, if they cool in the water they've cooked in, you cook them almost until they're done. When you feel like they're slightly underdone, cool them in the water, or even if you have stock, God bless you, much better in the stock. Cool them in the stock until they're literally cold, not room temp, or until they're cold. Then bring them out of that, and then you can double check them. You're probably going to do something else with them again anyway. But if you took them to where they were almost done, they will have cooled and carried over enough sitting in that water. But your texture should be intact on the chickpeas. That we keep talking about tomatoes that are a little bit overripe, very easy to make a salad with chickpeas and the tomatoes that are overripe. Almost any of the one or two simple vegetables. You know, and they love dried herbs, they love savory, they love dried thyme, dried rosemary. This is one of those things in the wintertime, if you want to make something that's very simple, easy, satisfying, helpful. So I think that's all we have time for.
That was fun.
And thanks for listening to Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
You can get this broadcast or others as podcasts on the WYPR website at wypr.org, and correspond with us with any questions or comments, Foreman Wolf at wypr.org. Thanks for listening to Foreman Wolf on WYPR.